The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special section headline, On the Fast Track, these 50 local companies experienced the greatest sustained year-over-year growth from 2021 to 2023. And as there are 50 companies, we'll read just the number one company, Veneer Installed Sales, headquarters Smithfield, CEO Maggie Lamp, number of employees 155, description, installation of home and commercial exteriors in the Carolinas and beyond. What is fueling your growth? Our company is growing because we combine skilled workers with smart technology. By bringing together a dedicated team and the latest tools, we streamline our siting installations and ensure top quality results. This blend of good people and good technology helps us meet and exceed our customers' expectations, making us a trusted choice in siding installation. Are you seeing enough quality candidates? Yes, we're fortunate to find many quality candidates in the Triangle. The local talent pool is impressive, and we focus on creating intuitive and clean operational processes. This not only attracts good people, but also helps them quickly become great team members. By providing the right environment and support, we empower our staff to excel and deliver exceptional results in every siding installation project. What is your policy on working from home and working in the office? Our remote work policy includes two key options: situational and emergency remote work. Situational remote work requires prior approval and specific equipment, including dual monitors and a company laptop. Employees must maintain regular communication and adhere to their work schedules. Emergency remote work also requires supervisor approval and is limited to the duration of the emergency. In all cases, employees must uphold company policies and maintain a professional workspace. Have interest rates had an impact on your business? Interest rates have impacted our business by shifting interest toward growing areas of the Triangle. We've observed increased attention in regions outside the hustle of Raleigh, such as Smithfield. Despite these changes, the overall market remains relatively steady. The influx of population growth from other states has helped keep the housing market in this area healthy. How many employees will you hire in the next 12 months? 45. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Triangle cashes in on soccer. Youth soccer is a major player when it comes to the market sports scene. Basketball and hockey tend to dominate the Triangle sports scene, especially when the local college football teams aren't doing well, but the market's soccer prowess is on display again this fall. First, the NCAA again put Cary front and center for college soccer when it awarded both the men's and women's college cups to Wake Med Soccer Park for the 2026 and 2027 seasons. Cary has hosted a staggering 38 NCAA championships since 2003, and the new awards bring to 23 the number of soccer championships in the city. All that is a direct result of intense interest in youth soccer in the area, and in the weeks ahead, local hotels will be packed with players and their families as the North Carolina FC Youth's VisitRaleigh.com showcase series arrives, with most games at the WRAL Soccer Park. The series already has 1,567 teams registered, a jump of more than 170 from a year ago. The group of tournaments include youth ages 10 to 19, runs from November 9 to December 15, and features younger players as well as top players looking to catch the eye of college coaches. Big youth events can mean big business for hotels and restaurants. Catherine Eberhard, the Chief Marketing and Development Officer at NCFC Youth, said the showcase series has filled 31,000 hotel rooms, with more on the way. Visit Raleigh officials say that's the largest for a local event, although it's spread over four weekends and most are just one. Meanwhile, the North Carolina Courage closed the regular season with a sold-out match of 10,026 fans, only its second sellout ever. Glaxo leader remembered for lasting impact. One of the most influential business leaders in the Triangle's life sciences industry died October 20th after a six-month battle with pancreatic cancer. Ernest Mario, 86, served as former CEO of Glaxo and senior partner at Pappas Capital, and also helped Duke University develop what has become one of the largest health systems in the area. After becoming Glaxo's CEO in 1986, Mario oversaw the launch of five major brands as Glaxo skyrocketed to become the second largest global pharmaceutical company. Mario also served as director of Wilmington's PPD and Durham's Chimerics. Additionally, Mario spent the past two decades helping to build Pappas Capital, a global venture firm that has raised more than $800 million and has guided the launch or development of more than 100 companies. He served on the Duke's Board of Trustees for 18 years and was the founding chair of the Duke University Health System's Board of Directors. Western NC parks start to reopen. North Carolina is blessed with abundant state parks, and the mountains have some of the most beautiful, and some are starting to reopen after Hurricane Helene. Crowder's Mountain, Gorges, Grandfather Mountain, and Lake Norman State Parks, as well as Rendezvous Mountain, have reopened in some capacity, the State Division of Parks and Recreation said, but still closed are a number of the state's most loved locations, including Chimney Rock and Mount Mitchell. We're very excited to be able to reopen these parks, and we hope to open additional facilities in November, State Parks Director Brian Strong said. Furniture store grabs Durham retail location. One of the Triangle's vacant Bed Bath & Beyond stores now has a new occupant. Bob's Discount Furniture has signed a 10-year lease for 33,839 square feet of space at 3616 Witherspoon Boulevard in Durham's Patterson Place Shopping Mall. The store, which sells rugs, mattresses, home decor, and furniture, plans to open next summer. It's the Connecticut company's first foray into North Carolina. And finally, downtown Raleigh loses Dollar General. A Dollar General DGX store that opened in downtown Raleigh with great fanfare is closing after nearly 8 years. The convenience store at the corner of Davie and Blunt Streets will close in December, according to a store employee, but the exit comes as more apartments are rising downtown and the corridor is changing. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. National home builders grab office space. Lennar signs for Morrisville space while Pulte Group heads to Cary. And this article is written by Kaylee Thompson. Some of the largest home builders in the country are grabbing office space in the Triangle, where strong demand for housing is fueling a booming industry locally. Lennar Homes of Miami and Pulte Group of Atlanta both signed new leases in the third quarter, according to CBRF. Lennar will be in 33,509 square feet at Perimeter Park in Mooresville, near Research Triangle Park. The home builder took over sublease space from Channel Advisor at 1010 Sink Street. Pulte Group signed a lease for 29,992 square feet at Regency Forest in Cary. The home builder signed a direct lease at 100 Regency Forest Drive that was previously offered as sublease space by Micromass. A representative for Lennar said the company signed the lease in August, as it has outgrown its current space in Perimeter Park. Pulte Group did not respond to a request for comment. CBRE handled both transactions. Large office leases no longer mean signing tenants to 100,000 or 150,000 square feet. Now, companies that take a significant amount of space are between 30,000 and 60,000 square feet, as the majority of tenants are in the 5,000 to 10,000 square foot range. This is played out at office buildings across the Triangle as leasing picks up. Lennar is the most active home builder in the Triangle based on Triangle Business Journal research. In 2023, it completed 2,465 homes in the region with an average price of $448,000. Pulte Group came in at number two with 1,190 homes completed with an average price of $477,000. Both builders have multiple communities in the works across the region. Last month, an LLC tied to Pulte Group purchased more than 150 acres off Plainville Church Road in Johnston County for roughly $3.12 million, according to Johnston County deed records. The land is near the western edge of the county and has an Anger address. And our next article is written by Ben Tobin. Sanford emerges as key player as Greater Triangle looks for water. In 2023, Sanford finalized a utilities merger with Pittsboro in a move that ensured the fast-growing Chatham County town has the water and wastewater capacity necessary to support large real estate developments. For Sanford, the merger proved to be yet another feather in the cap of the Lee County city that has long prided itself on meticulous infrastructure planning. Now, Sanford's reputation as a utility powerhouse has more communities knocking on the door about potential mergers. Siler City and Western Chatham County, as well as the Chatham County government, have both approached Sanford regarding separate utility mergers. The Sanford City Council approved the agreements during a meeting November 5. Similar to the deal with Pittsboro, Siler City and Chatham County would transfer all real and personal property that makes up their utility systems to Sanford, which operates its utility under the name Tri-River Water. The transfers would have to occur by summer 2025. For Siler City, a town of slightly more than 8,000 residents that is primed to grow with semiconductor manufacturer Wolfspeed building an 1,800-job factory nearby, the merger represents the ability to grow in a more sustainable way. Mayor Donald Matthews said earlier this year that things are happening here, but all of it is contingent on the water and the sewer. It's not just about adding capacity for housing developments. Large manufacturers like Wolfspeed and VinFast, which still says it plans to build an EV assembly plant in Southeast Chatham, also need access to huge quantities of water. For the Wolfspeed plant, the city of Asheboro received tens of millions in state tax dollars to improve its water utility to support the Chatham-Siler City megasite. In addition to the Chatham County area, Sanford now also helps supply water to two Wake County towns, Fuquay Varina and Holly Springs. Recently, those communities, along with Sanford and Pittsboro, came together to break ground on a more than $390 million water filtration facility expansion in Sanford. The move will increase the facility's treatment capacity from 12 million gallons per day, or MGD, to 30 MGD. Jack Meadows, acting interim town manager for Siler City, said the community has been under a moratorium regarding sewer capacity that has stymied new development in the town. The moratorium has been in place for over 2 years. The moratorium is stunting growth right now, he said. And the moratorium is not necessarily all about capacity. It's also about the filtering of the plant and improving water quality. But that is all being worked on, and we will have capacity. And with the partnership with Sanford, we'll be able to grow even more. There would be a limited amount of growth if we just stayed on our own, he added. For Sanford, these mergers are all about taking proactive measures with the utility system, according to Vic Czar, Sanford's assistant city manager. Czar said the mergers will lead to greater revenue diversification, provide greater resilience should anything ever happen to Sanford's water plant, potentially give Sanford access to the Western Intake Partnership between Chatham County, the Orange Water and Sewer Authority, and the City of Durham to ensure long-term water supply, and economies of scale, which can keep costs down. I think the mergers show that we take our utility seriously, Czar said. We have a good reputation. We have an important job of delivering drinking more water to people every day. North Hills adds True Food Kitchen. This article is written by Kate Tracy. True Food Kitchen is the latest in a string of new restaurants to open in the North Hills Shopping District. It's also the first True Food Kitchen in the state of North Carolina for the Scottsdale, Arizona-based company. The health food chain will start serving customers November 11 at 4104 Main at North Hill Street. The 5,798-square-foot space is part of the North Hills Main District and also has 1,241 square feet of outdoor dining. Guests can enjoy an open kitchen and a bar area with 10 taps. Founded in 2008, True Food has since expanded to 18 states, including Florida, Georgia, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, and Virginia on the East Coast. The company has 46 locations across the country. Private equity firm Centerbridge Partners is a major investor in True Food Kitchen. Affordable housing rises in Siler City. This is written by Ben Tobin. A new affordable housing complex in Siler City is a welcome sight for the town, primed to grow. The Oak View, a 72-unit complex located at 226 Campus Drive, opened last month. The $14 million project was financed using the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit. Developer Wallet Communities of Ohio partnered with Siler City and Chatham County to develop the community. Jake Gill, a development manager with Wallet, said, "Community leaders have expressed a need for places to house those workers as well as the lower-income residents in the county." Per Gill, monthly rental rates range from between roughly $500 and $1,000. Greenville Group buys retail center in Cary. Brody Co. is looking to increase its reach in the Triangle. And this article is written by Kate Tracy. A real estate firm based in Greenville made a multi-million dollar investment in Cary. Brody Co. recently purchased Ace Plaza, located at 2970 Kildare Farm Road, for $9.2 million. The 54,800-square-foot Ace Plaza, formerly Hemlock Plaza Shopping Center, is 100% leased. Tenants include Westlake Ace Hardware, Burrito Shack, Goldfish Swim School, Zoom Room, dog training, and more. The shopping center is located about 5 miles south of downtown Cary. Nathan Brody, vice president of operation at Brody Co., said the firm has predominantly pursued properties in Greenville and Wilmington, but has been increasingly active in the Triangle over the past few years. "We're long-term holders, and Cary's growth has just been phenomenal," he said. The Ace Plaza property last sold in 2019 to Raleigh-based APG Capital for $6.1 million per property records. The total assessed value of the site is $8.8 million. A Wendy's, preschool, and other outparcels were not included in the most recent sale. APG invested $1.1 million in improving the site. The recent sale price comes to $168 per square foot. "We are now thankful to be able to sell the center to one of North Carolina's finest retail development and operating companies, Brody Co., based in Greenville," APG founder and CEO Jim Anthony said in a statement. "We know they'll do a great job, and we feel good about our stewardship of this asset for our investors." Brody Co. has roots as a third-generation retailing family, starting in Sumter, South Carolina in 1917 and later opening to stores in Kinston and Greenville. It has since expanded beyond retail to residential, medical, office, industrial, and mixed-use real estate, according to its website. Hyman Brody serves as president and CEO, and David Brody as partner. Near Ace Plaza, Brody Co. also owns property at 400 Keesler Drive, where the Brain Balance Center is located. The firm paid $4.3 million for the property in 2019, per public records. Brody Co. also sold a Johnston County repair shop for more than $1 million, according to previous reporting. Brody said his firm will keep the shopping plaza as is for the next few years, but there's potential for redevelopment after that. "We're going to make sure it fits for the market," he said. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Kate Tracy's page, Retail and Restaurants. R.H. Raleigh adds sleek vibe to North Hills, restaurant and furniture gallery now open in revamped Main District. A high-end restaurant and furniture store has debuted in North Hills. R.H. Raleigh, the gallery at North Hills, has opened as part of Kane Realty Corporation's redevelopment of the North Hills Main District. The new three-story, 60,000-square-foot store features contemporary design collections with a third-story restaurant and bar. R.H., formerly Restoration Hardware, started construction on the new building in June 2023. Chairman and CEO Gary Friedman said the company wanted to expand with a bigger store based on demand at its current and smaller footprint in North Hills. Ascending the grand staircase to the third level, R.H. visitors will experience the rooftop restaurant, wine bar, and outdoor terraces, featuring live heritage olive trees, a glass roof, and retractable doors. The European-style restaurant can seat 120 to 140 people. And we'll stop there, as most of the rest of the article details food they'll be serving. Main brunch items vary in price from $18 to $36. Full-price sofas at R.H. Raleigh start at $2,195. And finally, the next generation of galleries supports our long-term vision to move the brand beyond creating and selling products to conceptualizing and selling spaces, Friedman said. Indian restaurant to close, change owners. An Indian restaurant is closing its Durham location, will also change ownership. Indian Monsoon Restaurant and Bar, located at 105 West Morgan Street, will close in mid-November. "We're immensely grateful for each of you who has been a part of our story, for the warm memories, shared meals, and your loyalty over the years," the restaurant posted on social media October 30th. The restaurant will be transitioning to new ownership and hinted at a new iteration of Indian Monsoon. "We're thrilled to welcome you soon to the new owner of the restaurant. Stay tuned for updates on what's to come," the announcement said. Indian Monsoon's owner did not respond to requests for comment. The restaurant is located on the ground level of a parking garage owned by the city. Indian Monsoon's neighbors include Humankind Studio, Splitwood Men's Hair and Salon, and salon lofts. The building is relatively new, having completed construction in 2020, according to property records. The food and beverage scene in Durham has seen recent changes. Octoon Coffee and Bar, a Tulum inspired coffee shop, cocktail bar, and restaurant from Chef Oscar Diaz, and the Mescalito Group opened recently near next to the Mescalita Durham. CT Weekends to close after long run in Village District. After 26 years in business, a women's clothing store in Raleigh is closing. CT Weekends, located at 437 Daniel Street in the Village District Shopping Center, formerly Cameron Village, announced it will close in a video posted to its social media. While we may be closing our doors, the moments we've shared will always remain open in our hearts, the post said. The store has been in business since 1998. CT Weekends carries clothing and accessories from a number of different designers. The highest priced dress on the store's website costs $564, while the most expensive top is $644. Plus, a sold-out skirt is the highest priced skirt or pant at $470, according to the store's website. The store's neighbors include Bassett Furniture, Cannons, and Cantina 18. The Village District has gone through a few retail changes in recent months. The wine cafe and restaurant Postino opened in July. Other new retailers at Village District include the women's boutique Copper Penny that moved from North Hills, the body piercing shop Rowan, and the furniture store Ballard Designs. And finally, Goldsboro Cocktail Bar to expand. Church Spirits to open second location on Main Street in fast-growing Clayton. A cocktail bar in Goldsboro is expanding to fast-growing Johnston County. Church Spirits and Cocktails, located at 136 North Center Street in Goldsboro, is opening a second space at 213 West Main Street in downtown Clayton. The 2,000-square-foot building was the former home of Epic Axe. Kyle Merritt, owner of Church Spirits, said the impetus for the expansion stems from the annual North Carolina Main Street Conference held in Goldsboro, which highlights how communities are growing their downtowns. Church Spirits hosted conference attendees, and Merritt had attendees from both Charlotte and Clayton reach out about expanding to their locales. We went and visited Clayton and really fell in love with how it's still a small town that it's pretty rapidly growing, and just thought that it'd be a great market to get in, he said. Merritt is leasing the new building for Church from Atlas Stark. The bar can seat 50 people indoors and also has outdoor space. Merritt, who grew up in Goldsboro, first started working as a server at restaurants when he was 18. He worked at a restaurant called Edge Southern Food and Spirits, where he advanced to running the bar at a young age. As a 21-year-old, he dreamed of opening his own bar but had no money to do so. Instead, he pursued a career in real estate, earning his real estate license at 23. Within 6 years, he opened Church Spirits. It was a pretty huge hit for Goldsboro, he said. We were the first people to put egg whites in a drink, so when people saw the egg white on the menu, they were taken aback. The bar has been open for 3 years and has expanded into a larger space, 2,000 square feet. Total sales last year were just under $500,000. My goal was to be a flagship destination. If you came to Goldsboro and asked what to do, people would point you to Church, and that's where we are, Merritt said. Church serves a menu of 8 classic cocktails, including an Old Fashioned, Tom Collins, or a Whiskey Sour, for $10 to $11 each. Part of being a business owner is knowing your market. A $15 cocktail is not going to excite people in Goldsboro, he said. Merritt tries to source his products locally and creatively, and vendors include Kill Devil Rum, Sutler Spirit Company, and End of Days Distillery. Church Spirits is not Merritt's main source of income, as he still works in real estate full-time. I just want it to be affordable, and we want people in our doors and to fill our space and enjoy a craft experience. I'm able to still use quality products and pay my staff really well, he said. Merritt has invested $85,000 of his own money to get the Clayton Bar up and running. He has a staff of 8 employees, including himself. Rent at the Clayton space is approximately $4,800 a month. And now we turn to the real estate and development page, written by Kaylee Thompson. In Apex, apartments sell below assessed value. An apartment community in Apex has sold for less than its assessed value, adding to the string of low-priced multifamily transactions in the Triangle following a flood of new inventory. Utah-based Bridge Investment Group recently acquired the Lake Cameron Apartments for $66.3 million, according to Wake County deed records. The property's assessed value is more than $73 million, well above what it was before this year's Wake County revaluations, which was about $42 million. Sales prices for apartment transactions have fallen from the level seen in 2022, when rental demand was soaring and inventory was lagging. Thousands of new units have delivered since 2023 in the region, and rent growth has cooled off. In recent months, the Avenues at RTP Apartments in Durham sold for $39.7 million, and the Cortland Perimeter Park Apartments in Mooresville sold for $66.5 million. The Lake Cameron Apartments are off Highway 55 near the Beaver Creek Commons Shopping Center. Bridge Investment bought the community from a joint venture between Fogelman Properties of Tennessee and DRA Advisors of New York. The companies paid $43.45 million in 2018. The garden-style apartments offer 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom floor plans. Former NC Mutual Tower gets new look, tenants. Turnbridge Equity sees interest rise after major investments in an iconic spot. The slow but steady pace of office leasing has continued, this time with leases at an iconic tower in Durham. Turnbridge Equities has signed more than 70,000 square feet of office leases in the past few months at the historic Mutual Tower, formerly the NC Mutual Building, along Willard and West Chapel Hill Streets. The leases included 7 new tenants and 1 renewal, bringing the building to 85% leased. Most of the leases were for smaller suites. The largest lease is a renewal by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for its 40,000 square feet of office space. Legal Aid of North Carolina signed on for nearly 10,000 square feet, while the American Civil Liberties Union of North Carolina took about 7,000 square feet. The remaining leases were for 4 smaller companies in the building's town hall space on the 4th floor, about 13,000 square feet total. The town hall is spec office suites that range from 1,500 to 6,000 square feet. It's 1,500 to 6,000 square feet and have a shared pantry and lounge space. The built-out space enables the tenant to immediately move in. The thing that's been missing from the market has been the really big tenants, a tenant taking 100,000 square feet, said Jason Davis, managing director for Turnbridge. We're not seeing that right now, and it's part of the reason for doing these spec suites. We're seeing a lot of activity in the 1,500 to 5,000 square foot range, coming out of COVID when doing anything was hard. The beauty is we've done it for them so they can see the space, they can like it, and they can move in that day. The town hall concept was so successful, Turnbridge turned the entire 9th floor into another one. Turnbridge has invested $10 million to update the tower. Renovations include adding an amenity area with a fitness center, hospitality lounge, and conference facility, constructing a small retail space, updating the HVAC, redoing the bathrooms and corridors on shared floors, enhancing the outdoor plaza, and restoring the exterior facade. High-end homes mapped in growing Holly Springs. Homes in the 900,000s are coming, $900,000s are coming to southern Wake County as the region's high-end living market continues to grow. Toll Brothers has started construction on its newest residential community in the Triangle. The Holly Springs community called Longleaf Crest will have 42 single-family homes with prices in the low $900,000s. When the community will be complete is unknown, as Toll Brothers declined to provide further information. The median sales price for homes in Holly Springs for September was $602,500, according to Dorify MLS, formerly Triangle MLS. Longleaf Crest is southwest of Holly Springs Core near Summit Creek Drive. It's along Buckhorn Duncan Road. Buckhorn Creek surrounds the property on 2 sides. The homes, which will go up for sale in early 2025, will range in size from 3,995 to 5,155 square feet with 4 to 6 bedrooms. There will also be 3.5 to 6.5 baths and 2 to 4 car garages. 5 home designs will be available to choose from with open floor plans, large primary bedroom suites, first floor guest suites, 2-story great rooms, and flex rooms and home offices. And finally, Wake County ABC gets ready to sell its property. Location near Raleigh Ironworks expected to draw intense developer interest. A property adjacent to Raleigh Iron Works is being positioned to sell. A 3.51-acre site on Wicker Drive, owned by the Wake County Board of Alcoholic Beverage Control, or ABC, will go through a rezoning to allow for up to 20 stories. Brian Hicks, general manager of the Wake County ABC, said it's getting ready to sell the property as it'll be moving all of its operations to a new facility in Garner. We want the best use zoning-wise for this piece of property, and so that is why we're going through this process with the city of Raleigh, Hicks said. We're not in the development business. Our plan is to get it rezoned and then sell it to somebody who wishes to develop it or maybe keep it and end up building a store here. A neighborhood meeting was held in October. Wake County ABC will now follow up with filing a rezoning application. The current zoning is industrial mixed use up to 3 stories. The proposed zoning is commercial mixed use up to 20 stories. Hicks said Grub Ventures has an interest in the property. When asked about the interest and if it would be used for the future of Raleigh Iron Works, a representative for Grub Ventures said, at this time, that is unconfirmed. The adjacent Raleigh Iron Works properties are zoned commercial mixed use up to 7 stories, while properties to the north and east are zoned industrial mixed use up to 3 stories. Directly to the south is a site zoned for 20 stories. The ABC site is at 1220 and 1246 Wicker Drive and holds 4 buildings built in 2016. The combined assessed value is about $10.6 million. Hicks said the rezoning application will be filed by the end of November, but that they aren't in a rush to sell the property considering Wake County ABC won't be able to fully move into its new location in Garner until fall 2025. The new location has 160,000 square feet of space, allowing Wake County ABC to move all of its operations to the building along Greenfield Parkway. Hicks said this will enable his organization to be more efficient, increase variety in product, and hire more employees. Wake County ABC has about 1,000 customers, of which 400 pick up at the Wicker Drive spot. Hicks emphasized that because of that high number, it has to over-communicate with its customers about the move and new location to make the transition easier. Raleigh Iron Works recently secured a new office tenant in Edgewater Ventures and is getting ready to open the city's largest climbing gym. And now we turn to Lauren Onosorge's page, Transportation and Development. Small airports look to lure commercial flights. Other NC towns look to get into the game as RDU keeps adding routes. Commercial flights to Pinehurst for the U.S. Open? That appears to be what Moore County Airport is targeting, particularly from the Northeast and Florida. As Raleigh-Durham International Airport keeps expanding, airports in the area are trying to pick up market share, citing the unpredictability of traffic as one reason their communities need flights of their own instead of relying on RDU. Fayetteville Regional Airport is also trying to double down on commercial air service, pushing for nonstop service to Washington, D.C. and Orlando, Florida. But it's unclear how a lack of funding might impact those efforts. RDU has a robust incentives program, funneling dollars into marketing initiatives and landing fee abatements to secure key service to places such as Frankfurt, Germany and Panama City, Panama. Smaller regional airports are looking to institute similar incentives, but they come at a cost, which is where the Federal Small Community Air Service Development Grant Program comes in. The program recently awarded a combined $11 million to 14 markets across the country. No airports in North Carolina receive funding, but Moore County Airport, or MCA, and Fayetteville Regional Airport applied. MCA's application says the airport wanted to leverage a $950,000 grant to incentivize service between the Pinehurst area and key targeted markets in the Northeast and in Florida. The airport mentions New York, Newark, Hartford, New Haven, Connecticut, and Florida's Orlando, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, and Fort Myers as possible destinations. While MCA was briefly served by Delta Airlines as recently as 2007, it has no commercial air service. In its application, MCA said it was in the process of obtaining Part 139 certification, which is required to serve scheduled aircraft with more than 30 seats. In Fayetteville, the goal was to restore service to Washington, D.C. and secure a new route to Orlando. Airport Director Andrew Lagala said Fayetteville would keep pursuing the flights regardless of the grant, which he said they would certainly apply for again. JetBlue to use bigger plane for flight to Puerto Rico. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's most delayed route is getting an upgrade. JetBlue Airways is swapping planes for its nonstop flight to San Juan, Puerto Rico, by upgrading the service to an Airbus A321 from an A320 starting in February. The A320 has a capacity of 152 seats. The A321 is 200. JetBlue said it's making the move due to a strong demand. The seasonal flight launches February 25 and runs through March 29. Earlier this year, JetBlue's RDU San Juan flight was listed as RDU's most delayed flight, being on time just 42% of the time. Research from Cirium estimated the average departure delay for the flight was 47 minutes. JetBlue announced its current service to San Juan in 2023. It had previously offered nonstop service to Puerto Rico, but cut the service in May 2022. Frontier Airlines also offers a nonstop to San Juan. Much of the new and upgraded service at RDU has been to leisure destinations in February. A Breeze launches a nonstop flight to Daytona Beach, Florida. It launches its nonstop flight to Sarasota later this month. And finally, Raleigh CEO outlines Helene recovery. Weeks after Superstorm Helene ripped through western North Carolina, one of the state's biggest quarry companies is working on a restoration plan. Will there be rebuilding? Yes, said Ward Nye, CEO of Raleigh-based rock crusher Martin Marietta Materials, during a third-quarter earnings call October 31. Martin Marietta supplies gravel, concrete, and other aggregate materials for the construction industry. Nye said it could take the better part of a decade to complete road and highway repairs in the mountains. He said the North Carolina Department of Transportation estimates Helene recovery expenses will be between $5 billion to $6 billion, and that the federal government typically reimburses between 60 and 65% of those costs, making the state's share of the burden about $2 billion. Nye said Martin Marietta is in position to help with operations west of Hickory, getting into the Appalachians with our North Carolina operations, he said. Martin Marietta doesn't expect to lose out on other NCDOT projects in the process, as it has been told. It's going to be business as usual in terms of construction and maintenance activity outside of the work for Helene, Nye said. So we're not going to see other parts of the state not continuing to advance, he said. And now we turn to the healthcare and life sciences page. This is written by Zach Ezone. Fujifilm scores big contract. Holly Springs plant will make drug for Morrisville's TG Therapeutics. Fujifilm Diasynth Biotechnologies will support manufacturing for a Morrisville firm's multiple sclerosis treatment at Fujifilm's $3 billion facility in Holly Springs. Fujifilm has signed a multi-year manufacturing supply agreement to produce the lead product for TG Therapeutics. The product, Briumvi, was approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in 2022, and that's spelled B-R-I-U-M-V-I. Fujifilm Diasynth's Holly Springs site is scheduled to be operational next year. The company will provide secondary U.S.-based manufacturing supply for Briumvi. TG currently produces the treatment at Samsung Biologics in South Korea, but as the company looks to further grow the treatment, TG decided to find another manufacturing partnership. As we continue to expand our commercialization efforts in MS and think about the future of Briumvi, we believe this is an important next step that will continue to support our growth plans and provide additional security for our drug supply, TG CEO Michael Weiss said during an earnings call November 4. The companies did not disclose financial details of the agreement. TG, which in early 2023 began listing Morrisville as its headquarters, also reported November 4 net product revenue from Briumvi in the third quarter of $83.3 million. The company is projecting net revenue from Briumvi for the year to be $300 million to $305 million, surpassing the company's original full-year guidance for 2024 of $220 to $260 million. This is the second time Fujifilm has confirmed a client for its Holly Springs facility. In 2023, it said Janssen Supply Group, a division of Johnson & Johnson, would use a large-scale manufacturing suite at the facility. Fujifilm began building out a $2 billion manufacturing facility in Holly Springs in 2021, and earlier this year increased the size of its investment to about $3.2 billion. The company expects that about 1,400 employees will work at the site by 2031. Pharma firm sees stocks soar after drug launch. A Raleigh biopharmaceutical company has passed $3 billion market capitalization amid the launch of its lead drug. Verona Pharma is already recording millions of dollars in revenue after launching the drug in August. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration in June approved Verona's lead product, Ohtuvayre, that's spelled O-H-T-U-V-A-Y-R-E, as a maintenance treatment for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Verona in the third quarter reported $5.6 million in net sales of Ohtuvayre. While Verona has not provided guidance for the fourth quarter, Verona CEO David Zaccardelli said net sales for October exceeded the third quarter. Since the company fully launched Ohtuvayre, more than 5,000 prescriptions had been filled through the end of October. The company is seeing the drug prescribed broadly across all patient segments, including those already receiving COPD therapies. While it's still very early in the launch, we are extremely encouraged by the strong start to the U.S. commercialization of Ohtuvayre, Zaccardelli said November 4. Ohtuvayre is the first inhaled COPD treatment to provide both bronchodilation and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory effects, and we are confident that it can redefine the COPD treatment paradigm. FDA lifts hold on Durham drug firm. A Durham biopharmaceutical company can resume development of multiple clinical programs after getting the green light from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The FDA has lifted a clinical hold on three cell therapies being developed by CarsGen Therapeutics, the firm said. The company is focused on developing chimeric antigen receptor T, or CAR-T, cell therapies to treat hematologic malignancies and solid tumors. CarsGen in early 2021 announced plans to invest about $157 million in the facility at 4022 Stirrup Creek Drive. The facility became operational in 2022, but after an inspection, the FDA in July issued CarsGen a warning letter identifying five instances of it violating federal regulations. Among other violations, the letter described a situation on July 14, 2023, when the company's quality assurance team observed a month-old box of food that was covered in scuttlefly pupae in a mechanical room that houses the facility's air handling units. The box of food was not removed until about 2 weeks later. And finally, after setback, pharma seeks approval again. A biopharmaceutical company in Durham is trying again to get its investigational migraine treatment approved following a previous regulatory setback. Satsuma Pharmaceuticals has resubmitted a drug application after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in January declined to approve its previous application. The FDA earlier this year informed Satsuma that the agency denied the application due to issues related to chemistry, manufacturing, and controls considerations, according to a statement from the company's Japanese parent company, Shin Nippon Biomedical Laboratories. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Microsoft plans point toward a data center. Tech giant's past investments signal its ideas for 1,350-acre tract. Microsoft isn't saying what it's planning to do with the Person County megasite it just bought, but the company's past investments in North Carolina could signal what's to come. The tech giant, based in Redmond, Washington, paid close to $27 million to acquire the 1,350-acre Person County megapark. Triangle Business Journal first reported October 31. It's an unusual move. Typically, companies work to secure incentives through the North Carolina Department of Commerce, announce a specific project with an investment and jobs creation total, and then acquire the land. In this case, Microsoft bought the land and isn't sharing what it plans to do with it. But the company has been investing heavily in data centers, including in North Carolina. In 2022, Microsoft announced it would invest $1 billion over the next decade in data center operations in Catawba County. And so far this year, Microsoft has broken ground on three facilities in the county, according to data center publication Data Center Dynamics. Gil Luria, an analyst at D.A. Davidson who closely follows Microsoft, said he expects the tech giant to continue its investment by making the Person County Mega Park a data center. It's very likely they're building a data center, Luria said. Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are in a wild race to secure land next to power sources around the world so they can run their generative AI applications. Gordon Powell, chairman of the Person County Board of Commissioners, also thinks the site could be used for a data center. It makes sense considering the world we live in today, Powell said. They wanted power, they wanted land, they wanted water, and all of those entities were there. But we have not been told a number of employment nor what their plans are with what they're going to build. Employment numbers for data centers are relatively small. For instance, Microsoft's new data centers in Catawba County are expected to create at least 50 new jobs. German firm to cut jobs as New Bern takes a hit. A German wire manufacturer shutting down its operations in New Bern and laying off more than 100 workers. Dradura USA, a subsidiary of Dradura, D-R-A-D-U-R-A, filed a Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, or WARN, letter with the North Carolina Department of Commerce on October 31, saying it will lay off 119 workers at its operation at 197 Bosch Boulevard in Craven County. Representatives of the company did not respond to requests seeking comment. Jeff Wood, Economic Development Director for Craven County, said the company cited restructuring of the company in Europe, which caused uncertainty with their customers. We are working closely with NC Works, the Eastern Carolina Workforce Development Board, and Craven Community College to assist those employees that have been impacted, Wood said. We have a number of companies in the area hiring and want to let those employees know of those options. Wood added that Dradura leased its factory space in New Bern and that the county, as well as partners in the state, will market the product. It has had multiple tenants in the past, he said. Dradura has been in New Bern a number of years. Florida investor grabs 34 acres near Smithfield. A Florida firm continues to target the Triangle with sizable investments in residential real estate. DFC Revolver III, tied to DF Capital Management out of Ponte Vedra Beach, in Florida, purchased 34.5 acres of Crantock Road, off Crantock Road in Smithfield, for a little over $3.1 million in October, according to Johnston County deed records. The land is vacant and is zoned for residential use. Representatives of the company did not respond for comment. According to its website, DF Capital Management focuses on investing in single-family residential real estate. The group partners with Florida home builder Dream Finders Homes Incorporated. The deed, indicating DF Capital Management's purchase, said it purchased 35 lots in the Shiloh Woods neighborhood. Per Johnston County's plat book records, Shiloh Woods will be a 71-home community. Profile construction of Clayton is listed on the plat recording. Triangle Business Journal recently reported that an LLC tied to DF Capital Management purchased 34.5 acres off Fort Bragg Road between the towns of Southern Pines and Aberdeen in Moore County for a little over $3 million, according to Moore County deed records. And our last reporter page in the Triangle Business Journal is written by David Pertell, On the Coast. Wealth moves to growing eastern NC counties. A Business Journal's analysis of data from the U.S. Census Bureau and Internal Revenue Service shows that four coastal counties saw a net gain of more than $100 million in adjusted gross income between 2021 and 2022 when comparing in and out migration patterns. Brunswick County led the way, gaining more than $487 million in adjusted gross income. In fact, Brunswick County saw the largest gains in that category statewide. That figure is well above Wake County's net gain of $350 million and easily beats the second-place county in the state, Buncombe, home of Asheville, at $362.5 million. Rounding out the eastern North Carolina counties that saw a net gain of more than $100 million in adjusted gross income are New Hanover County, $228.4 million, Carteret County, $177.2 million, and Pender County, $158.3 million. When it comes to immigration, Brunswick was pulling in some heavy hitters in terms of income. The average income per tax filer was nearly $110,000, and the same goes for Dare, $125,532, and Carteret, $133,945. Counties in the far northeast of the state and Outer Banks. Brunswick and Pender counties are the two fastest growing counties in North Carolina. Between 2022 and 2023, Brunswick's population grew by 4.6% and Pender grew by just shy of 4.3%, according to census data. Rail plan moves forward. Train to the coast will require multiple funding sources. A recently completed feasibility study by WGI Inc. breaks down two potential routes, dubbed Eastern and Western, for a plan to connect Raleigh and Wilmington via passenger rail. A typical 129-mile trip between downtown Raleigh and downtown Wilmington takes a driver about 2 hours and 10 minutes. The Eastern route follows the North Carolina Railroad Company's NC line from Raleigh to Goldsboro, then moves to corridors owned by CSX and NCDOT from Goldsboro to Wilmington, taking about 2 hours and 35 minutes to get from Raleigh to Wilmington. The Western route connects rail lines between Raleigh, Selma, Fayetteville, Pembroke, and Wilmington and would take about 3.5 hours. This route would be 53 miles long and cost about $170 million more than the Eastern alternative. It would also cost $3 million to $4 million more to operate and maintain each year, but there are advantages. Because it connects a higher number of populated areas, the Western route is projected to attract more overall ridership than the Eastern route, the study states. Though its estimates, it estimates ridership projected in Wilmington would decrease due to the circuitousness of the route. The next steps, according to the study, are for municipalities to consider including passenger rail and associated project in their region's transportation plans. The project can then be submitted for funding with the state, dollars that can then be used as leverage or a match in order to pursue federal grants, which could offer up to 80% of the project's costs. Wilmington doesn't currently have an active rail station, but the study suggests Paget Station downtown, as it's the first phase of an envisioned multimodal transportation center located at the end of an existing rail bed. According to Eastern Carolina Rail, the last time passengers traveled the Raleigh-Wilmington route by rail was 1968. Vital bridge over Cape Fear River to be replaced. 3 months after the state scored more than $240 million to replace a 55-year-old bridge over the Cape Fear River in Wilmington, the project is advancing behind the scenes. The Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, a four-lane steel vertical lift bridge built in 1969, is becoming functionally obsolete, unable to meet current and future traffic levels as the coastal region grows rapidly. It's so critical that it recently underwent a $7.1 million preservation project to extend its life until a replacement could be built. The 0.7-mile bridge carries U.S. 17, U.S. 76, U.S. 421 across the river between Brunswick and New Hanover counties, a key corridor, particularly for trucks transporting freight to and from the port of Wilmington. Trace Howell, senior project manager for NCDOT, called it a priority for the region as it's a highly traveled route to and from Brunswick County, the fastest-growing county in the state. We're already projecting 100,000 vehicles in the future, and I don't think people are aware of the costly maintenance, Howell said. And finally, home builder zeroes in on New Bern community. Texas-based D.R. Horton, the nation's largest home builder, purchased roughly 50 lots in a neighborhood called Tyler, home on the lake in New Bern for a little more than $3.25 million at the beginning of October, according to Craven County deed records. The community, located off Lake Tyler Drive, is northwest of downtown New Bern and near the Neuse River. Representatives of D.R. Horton did not respond to requests seeking comment regarding how large the neighborhood will be at full build-out. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the Viewpoint page, and we'll read the guest column written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Let's Reform How We Pay NC Teachers. During the just-ended 2024 election campaign, candidates for offices such as governor, legislature, county commission, and state superintendent of public instruction talked a lot about raising the pay of public school teachers in our state, as well they should have. Even after adjusting for living costs, for example, the average first-year teacher makes nearly $1,000 more in Georgia than in North Carolina, $2,000 more in South Carolina, $2,500 more in Florida, and $8,000 more in Texas. Now, the pay differences aren't as pronounced at other levels of teacher experience, nor are North Carolina public schools primarily vying with districts in other states for talent. What these data really tell us is that school districts in other states are competing more aggressively for folks who might otherwise choose to work in other education jobs inside or outside their home states or pursue other careers entirely. Teacher compensation is obviously a fiscal question. The General Assembly has enacted raises in recent years and needs to do more. But it is only a fiscal question. As the education reform group Best NC put it in a recent report, the problem is not just about how much teachers are paid, but also how that pay is structured. I've already spotlighted one flaw in North Carolina's approach. We set starting salaries comparatively low and then gradually raise them through annual steps. As a result, we're making early career teachers wait too long to get to a reasonable level of compensation. We ought to flatten the pay curve more than we already have. By no means, however, do I mean to suggest that mid-career teachers ought to have no paths to meaningful boosts in their compensation. What most academic research on the subject demonstrates, and what the Best NC report recommends, is that pay in North Carolina ought to be much more differentiated. Those who teach hard-to-staff subjects, such as science and advanced math, should be paid significantly more than other teachers, as should those who teach in hard-to-staff schools with rates of student disadvantage, those who take on greater responsibilities, such as training other teachers, and those whose evaluations show consistently high performance. An innovative study just released by the National Bureau of Economic Research confirms many of these insights. Andrew Johnson, an economist at the University of California, Merced, presented a series of compensation offers to teachers in a large school district in Texas. One finding particularly stood out to me. While the participating teachers did, all other things being equal, prefer to teach smaller classes instead of larger ones, the preference wasn't all that strong. The cost of reducing class size is 7 times greater than teachers' willingness to pay, Johnson wrote. The study found that teachers valued performance-based pay, although they tended to prefer a blended model rather than one focused solely on value-added test scores. Based on these findings, school districts often underutilize salary and performance pay while overutilizing retirement benefits when competing for teachers, Johnson concluded. Restructuring compensation can significantly improve both teacher welfare and student achievement, he said. That's precisely the course North Carolina policymakers should pursue in 2025 and beyond. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.